Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
From The Times and The Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. America is in the grip of the worst drugs crisis it's ever faced.
More people in the United States between the ages of 18 and 49 die from fentanyl than from guns, car accidents, or any other cause, period.
The DEA calls fentanyl the single deadliest drug threat our nation has ever encountered. What was once an obscure drug to treat pain in end-stage cancer patients has become the leading cause of death for American adults under the age of 50.
Fentanyl is flooding the streets of America. But how is this synthetic drug, made in labs, getting there?
The U.S. puts blame on China for sending chemicals to Mexico, where cartels make the deadly drug and bring it into the U.S.
The Chinese Communist Party has been waging an opium war in reverse against the United States for far too long. As tens of thousands of Americans have perished from overdoses, Chinese officials turned a blind eye to the drug criminals who profited off of our pain.
The cartels that operate within Mexico have this massive experience of exporting drugs to the United States, from marijuana to cocaine to crystal meth. And so they were very well established and set up to become a key cog in this international trade.
The story today, inside the fentanyl trade, the drug killing 200 Americans a day. To find out how this deadly drug is pouring into America, the Sunday Times sent two of our foreign correspondents on the trail of fentanyl.
I'm Kieran Southern, the West Coast correspondent.
I'm Stephen Gibbs, and I cover Latin America and the Caribbean.
And Kieran, you're talking to us from LA. You recently visited a part of LA known as Skid Row. Now, this is something I sort of feel like I've heard over the years almost as an expression without realizing it was a physical thing. Just tell us a bit about it. Where is it? And how did it get its name? What is it like?
Skid Row is a neighborhood in downtown Los Angeles. It's about 100 years old since it sort of became home to people who were having a tough time in the Depression. It was home to many flop houses, and then since that period it's just grown and grown. It's sort of become synonymous with bad neighborhoods. There are more than 4,000 people who live there homeless. There are tents everywhere. It's squalid, it's filthy. Reporting this story, I walked down there to speak to some of the people who live there to get an idea of the impact that fentanyl's had. There's rubbish strewn about the street. You've got people who are living with rats. If you go early in the morning, as I did, there's people lighting fires to stay warm. There's a very strong, putrid smell. People in wandering the streets who are in obvious mental breakdowns.
It sounds horrific. And you went to sort of see the impact of fentanyl there. Just give us a sense. How many of the people you encountered were on fentanyl, and how did it affect them?
You see scores of the hundreds, if not thousands of people I saw, and it affects people in different ways. There was a guy sat on a bench at a bus stop, and he had a pipe, and he was a big guy, overweight, and he was dressed in sort of, hesitate to use the term, but normal clothes. He didn't look like those around him, but he was quite openly smoking. I asked him what it was, and I said, is that fentanyl? And he said, yes. He seemed quite with it, but I've encountered that before in other cities. Whereas for other people who perhaps have done too much or the tolerance isn't quite as high, it leaves them like zombies. And as I was walking around, you see people standing there, hunched over, swaying, unconscious. You can't speak to them. Other people passed out in the street. There's the constant stream of ambulances dealing with overdoses. And the people I spoke to, everyone inevitably knew someone who died of a fentanyl overdose in the last 2 years.
That's awful. And from the people you spoke to, I mean, what did they say about the experience of taking fentanyl?
They describe it as euphoric, which is quite difficult to marry up to the image of when you see them on it and they're basically not there. You know, they are like zombies. But to hear them describe it, it's a euphoric feeling, hence why they sacrifice everything to chase it. But I've also spoken to people who are so addicted that the withdrawals from the drug are just so severe that they need it to feel normal. So they're trapped in this vicious circle. If they stop it, they're in unbearable pain and mental anguish, and it's slowly killing them.
And tell us about Nicole Cossio.
Bumped into Nicole while I was down on Skid Row. She actually began talking to me. She said she felt unsafe. She said that people were following her. I think she was in her mid-40s. She had a shaven head. She was stick thin. She told me that she'd been awake for days, high on crystal meth.
Wow.
She was obviously in a paranoid state. But she'd done fentanyl before. She said it killed so many of her friends. But she doesn't do it anymore. She said it scares her because she's seen it kill that many people. And I thought it was interesting that even in her state, you know, being awake for days on crystal meth in this paranoid state, but she was still so wary of fentanyl, having overdosed before.
And Kieran, you talked about the squalor, and clearly, you know, there was a lot of that on Skid Row. But this is a problem that seems to have percolated through every bit of society. I mean, tell us about some of the families you've been talking to.
Yeah, I think that's the unique and dangerous thing about fentanyl, is that it doesn't spare anyone. Many celebrities have died through fentanyl, most notably Prince. I think that was one of the first instances where everyone first heard of this strange drug that's 50 times more potent than heroin. But I spoke to the Leopolds, Michelle and Jeff, whose son Trevor was 18 when he died of a fentanyl overdose. Now, the Leopolds are a very upper-middle-class family. They live in Marin County, one of the richest counties in America. It's just over the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. Just a really idyllic place, beautiful place to live and raise a family. The Leopolds, they own hardware stores, very well off. Just a sort of picture book American family. But Trevor, he was a sort of a troubled teen. He experimented with marijuana, became addicted to that. But his parents thought he turned a corner. He went off to university. But a few months into his studies, he was 18, and he took a tablet. He didn't realise it was fentanyl, but it did have fentanyl in it, and it killed him. And now his mum, Michelle, she's dedicated her life to raising awareness of the drug, and she hands out overdose reversal kits wherever she can. She speaks to school students to tell them not to take that risk. And that's quite a common story across America. I've spoken to many bereaved parents, often it's mothers whose lives have just been completely destroyed by this drug, and now their main motivation is to stop that happening to someone else.
I mean, the situation in America just sounds horrific, unlike anything we've experienced here, thankfully. But stepping back, Stephen, give us a sense, you know, where has this problem come from? What is fentanyl? How did it come about?
Well, fentanyl was designed in the late 1950s in Belgium as a very powerful painkiller, very useful for people that have had things like cardiac surgery. And it's still used as a painkiller now, particularly in terminal cancer care. But I think one of the reasons it has sort of become this scourge is it's very cheap. It's just a few dollars per hit. It's very potent and it's very addictive. Experts I spoke to describe, you know, what Kieran referred to in terms of this euphoria that people who take sense. But alongside that, there's this trick it plays on the brain where the brain sort of says, we need more of this or we're going to die. So you have this extraordinary craving for this cheap opiate that's so easily smuggled and so easily available. People have been trying to understand why this is a peculiarly North American problem. One explanation might be the sort of prescription drug policy that for decades people have been prescribed opiates as painkillers. A small percentage of those, you know, when their prescriptions run out, may be addicted and may seek on the black market illegal versions of those drugs. That's quite a convincing argument. The question also is sort of why has it exploded now? This drug has been around since the 1960s, but it's really in the last sort of 5 years, let's say, or even more recently than that, that it's really exploded. I haven't found anyone who's got a perfect answer to that. One explanation might be the pandemic and people were bored and sort of experimented more. You know, there is this theory that China deliberately has been flooding the United States with it too. But what's without question is just the scale of this problem. It's unlike anything in terms of a drug crisis that the world's ever seen.
And Stephen, you mentioned the idea that China is flooding America deliberately with it. Just explain, you know, firstly, where is fentanyl produced?
Well, fentanyl is made from around 10 chemicals. There's not sort of a precise formula. There are different variations of fentanyl, but it's basically made from about 10 chemical components. Where do you find those chemicals? Well, the answer is China. China is the world's biggest producer of all chemicals. If you're a legitimate paint maker, for example, you know, and you need to find the ingredients for your paint, you go to China, probably. And it's the same if you're a drug manufacturer. Where is it produced? Initially, it was produced in China, but that has diminished. It's a prohibited drug in China. And what we've been seeing more recently is that Mexico has become the place where fentanyl is produced. The precursor chemicals, as they're called, largely come from China. Not entirely. Some come from other places, including India, but mostly from China. The pills, these tiny little light blue pills, are produced mostly in Mexico. And then very easily, they're smuggled to the United States.
How is it doing that? Is there a relationship here between some of the drug cartels in Mexico and China?
Mexico has this vast experience. The cartels that operate within Mexico have this massive experience of exporting drugs to the United States, from marijuana to cocaine to crystal meth. And so they were very well established and set up to become a key cog in this international trade. And it was always a sort of slight mystery of how all of that worked. You know, how did the Mexicans get in touch with the Chinese to do this? And some details have been coming out, and some of them via people that have been closely associated to Mexican cartels. One who's been giving interviews recently is a chap called Damaso López Serrano. Now, he is a godson of El Chapo Guzman, one of the most notorious drug lords in the world, who's currently in jail in the United States. His godson was a pretty high up figure in the Sinaloa cartel, and he's been in jail for his crimes. He's currently cooperating with US prosecutors under a witness protection scheme. And he's been giving some interviews. And in one, he clearly described what happened. And that was about 7 years ago.
The first contacts were made between the Sinaloa cartel and Chinese precursor manufacturers. And he said quite clearly, quite openly, you know, we sent people over to China and they were shown how to make fentanyl, how to do the chemistry of it, really. And one of the most striking things he said was when they sort of cracked the code, when they worked out how to do this with the help of Chinese advisors, I'm not saying government advisors, I'm saying Chinese drug manufacturers, they then began to manufacture fentanyl in Mexico. And one of the things he said is they were astonished at the profit you can make. Every dollar invested, it would go up by 20 times very, very quickly. And sort of low-level smugglers who were taking fentanyl to the United States were making kind of $50 million a year. So that was an absolute jackpot for these Mexican cartels. So much easier than smuggling heroin or cocaine with all the complexities and the volume of that and the fact that you have to sort of grow it, etc. Here was this magic little pill, amazingly dangerous, but also just monstrously profitable.
You mentioned earlier that there is a theory about China and how all of this is coming about. Just talk us through the idea of a reverse opium war. What exactly that means?
I mean, this is the sort of neat but not necessarily true theory. And that is, of course, that what happened in the mid-19th century when Britain and France and other Western powers deliberately flooded China with opium with great societal damage to China and great advantage to those Western powers, where China's getting its own back, you know, and fentanyl being the new opium and is deliberately flooding the United States with it. Now, there's no evidence for that, and Beijing denies the suggestion. Perhaps the closest to the truth might be that Beijing is less worried about this than it perhaps could be. I mean, because it just sees this as a sign of the degeneration of the United States. And there's only so much China can necessarily do to stop it. But that's the theory, and it's a good headline that this is a reverse opium war, but it probably is rather more complex than that.
This weekend, Times subscribers can catch the latest episode of Inside the Newsroom, our new behind-the-scenes series on Apple Podcasts, just for subscribers. You can find it on the Story feed. You can also listen back to previous episodes, including this chat with our podcast critic, James Marriott.
The real curse, of course, of all this stuff is the terrible celebrity podcasts whereby everyone who's remotely famous thinks they should be allowed to chat into a microphone for, you know, an hour every week. I mean, that's somewhat hypocritical of me, myself, chatting into a microphone as I tell you this.
Visit thetimes.co.uk/bonuspodcasts to find out more.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Stephen, you were telling us about how these chemicals begin life in China and then arrive in Mexico. You've been down to sort of follow this route. Just tell us a bit about what it's like around the ports where these drugs are coming in.
Well, I went to Manzanillo, which is a Pacific port in Mexico, and till relatively recently, it was quite a small port. In fact, in the 1970s, there was barely any port at all there. Manzanillo was much more famous as being a place where the jet set used to go. But what we've seen since then, and there's a clear reason for this, and that is the rise of China, is this Pacific-facing port of Manzanillo has suddenly sort of exploded inside. So there's this beach town, and just next to it is one of the biggest ports in the world that is handling 3 million sea containers every day, and sort of overshadows this, what was once a sort of pretty little beach resort. And of course, amongst that are these precursor chemicals. And I should point out, of course, one of the real problems anyone trying to sort of stop all this from happening is a lot of those precursor chemicals are legitimate chemicals. They're used for things like bleaching agents.
So these are the chemicals that go into producing fentanyl, but on their own are perfectly legal.
Exactly. And so one of the ways that the smugglers have been getting them in is by setting up the sort of front companies called, I'm inventing this, but for example, you know, the sort of the Mexico Pharmaceutical Company based in Mexico City, and it will legally import all these components in the jigsaw that later they put together and produce this potent drug. So that's one of the problems. And the other problem is just the scale of trade that's happening in Manzanillo. As I said, you've got 3 million containers coming in every year. It's absolutely impossible, really, even if you really wanted, to detect a few bags of chemicals amongst the televisions, cars, agricultural produce, et cetera, that is flooding into that port, a very, very successful part of the Mexican economy.
And was there an awareness amongst the people around this very busy port that some of the things coming in might be contributing to the fentanyl crisis? Did you speak to anybody there who understood that this was part of a smuggling route, really, even though the chemicals may be perfectly legal?
I managed to find someone who worked inside the port and was prepared to speak to us, but on the condition that we didn't identify him and didn't use his voice in any recordings, etc. But a very, very interesting conversation I had with this guy. And one of the first things he said is, not only have you got this huge problem of trying to basically find a needle in a haystack, you've also been dealing with a massive endemic corruption inside the port where he works. He has a legitimate company sort of importing and exporting things. So he knows what he's talking about. He gave me some examples. He said, say you have a container perhaps full of televisions and it's worth $100,000. The taxes and duties on that import would correctly be about 30%, about $30,000. But if you want to not pay that, you just pay someone in the customs there $6,000. The container just goes straight through without any inspection. So you save yourself quite a lot of money. There's no inspection at all. And the reason he used that as an example is that while the US might say to, say, Mexico, right, you need to clamp down on this port and you need to see if these precursor chemicals are coming in, it's kind of impossible when you've got such a level of corruption. And he went on to say that if some of those containers, if there is a tip-off, perhaps, for example, from the United States, that they think the drugs or the chemicals are coming in on a particular container, he said, you see that one being put aside, supposedly for inspection, and then the next morning, it's disappeared. Someone's been paid off. The cranes move in the night, he said,
Wow. And
it's been cleared. So he was really saying that despite the promises of the Mexican government, it's really, really difficult behind the scenes of this apparently legitimate port and this rather attractive beach town. There are cartels that are operating and making a huge amount of money, and absolutely nothing currently really is going to get in their way.
Can you sense their presence there?
A funny thing is you sort of half can and half can't. I was concerned in a way, you know, reporting a story about drug trading in Mexico has its risks. But you go to Manzanillo and immediately you see it's a place where people from Mexico City go for a very nice long weekend with their family. So it seemed there was a sort of refreshing normality about it. But one of the things that this man who worked in the port said is, don't be deceived. This is a bit of a theater that the cartels have said, you know, we won't mess on our doorstep. Everything will look peaceful and calm. But behind the scenes, and if you touch the drug trade or you try and operate to try and stop it, then it's completely different. And people do get killed and people disappear and all this happens, but it's barely reported because the cartels like to keep this sort of facade that nothing is untoward.
What does the Mexican government say about fentanyl in Mexico?
It's a good question because surprisingly, really, there's a degree of denial from the López Obrador government that's in power at the moment. They've tended to say, you know, this is not our problem and it's a problem that doesn't exist. I mean, as recently as last year, 2023, its foreign ministry was actually said, you know, fentanyl is not produced at any scale in Mexico, which totally contradicts the evidence, including from its own police forces and from all the evidence at the border where it's absolutely clear that this stuff is flooding across. So there has been a problem, really, for trying to stop this. Although, of course, arguably, it's almost impossible to stop from the trafficking point of view.
Ah. I mean, it is surprising to see the government coming out in full denial like that. Kieran, that's certainly not been your experience of fentanyl production in Mexico. Tell us a bit about what you've seen.
Yeah, I was in Tijuana, where I was taken by the state police of Baja California to busted fentanyl labs and hideaways for the drug just across the border. Tijuana obviously is on the US border with San Diego, and that's sort of a double-edged sword. I mean, it brings a lot of wealth into the city, but also it makes it a hub of the drugs trade, which brings everything that you would expect as a sky-high homicide rate in Tijuana. A lot of crime, journalists there live in fear. Even the police don't feel safe.
But wow.
The laboratory I was taken to was only about 30 minutes or so from the border. And the quantity of fentanyl that it was able to pump out, just vast amounts of the drugs that can then be put in the back of a car and taken over the border. And it really does challenge the Mexican government's assertion that there is no fentanyl production on any meaningful scale when you've got these nondescript houses that are being used as drug factories that are pumping out the drugs that are then taken across the border and have such a terrible impact on American cities.
And on the American side, you know, there is this awareness that drugs are being smuggled in. What have they done about it?
Well, yeah, it's obviously a massive issue for both parties, given the scale of the destruction that fentanyl has brought to basically all levels of American society. President Biden had a high-profile summit with President Xi of China near San Francisco in November. Fentanyl was high up on the agenda there.
China took action to greatly reduce the amount of fentanyl shipped directly from China to the United States. But in the years since that time, the challenge has evolved from finished fentanyl to fentanyl chemical ingredients and pill presses, which are being shipped without control.
Biden praised Xi's commitment on the issue, with Xi promising a crackdown on his side for the precursor chemicals. But a lot of analysts said, well, we'll have to wait and see if those words carry on to action. On the legal side of things, prosecutors across America have begun charging fentanyl dealers with homicide in an attempt to stop the problem at that level. And that's being pursued in red states, blue states, as a sort of fitting response to what's happening. The prosecutor's saying, well, if dealers think that they can end up doing 30 years in prison for manslaughter for selling these drugs, perhaps it will make them think twice. America's also beefed up security on the border. Fentanyl is so easily transported and so small and can be fit into basically any vehicle that it's very difficult to catch it as it comes through the border.
And Kieran, you've looked at this story for a while now. You've looked at sort of how it's making its way into America. You've looked at the effect it's having. You know, as somebody who lives in LA at the moment, would you say this is a problem America can grapple with? That, you know, is there any way this gets any better anytime soon?
Well, there are signs that it's starting to plateau. The last couple of years, the number of fentanyl deaths has held steady in the mid-70,000s. I think the figure is, which is still astronomically high, but at least it's not rising at the same rate that it was during the pandemic. Experts I've spoken to have said, we've just got to learn to live with this drug now. You know, it's not a very hopeful outlook, with the sort of best that you can hope for that the problem doesn't get any worse and perhaps you begin to tackle it slowly, year by year. But I certainly don't think there's going to be any miracle cure. You know, obviously we've got an election later this year. Both President Biden and former President Trump have promised action on this at varying times. But the fact that you can smuggle in such huge quantities of fentanyl quite easily, and the fact that there's a huge appetite for it in America, I don't think we're going to meaningfully see the number of overdose deaths dive anytime soon.
And Stephen, just finally, you know, we don't know whether the theory about a reverse opium war is correct, but is there something to it in terms of the effect it's having on America? You know, if this was a deliberate attempt to try and hollow out American society, is it working?
This is a very, very serious crisis, you know, that is affecting all levels of society. I think there was a survey that said that 40% of Americans know someone who has been killed by fentanyl. That has a pretty serious effect on a society and whatever the prime mover behind it was. The Chinese government, of course, says this is nonsense. The original opium war was a real thing, but to try and claim that they're doing a reverse version is, according to sort of Beijing, preposterous. But as your question pointed to, whatever the reason behind this is really destructive for a society. And that's why the politicians are talking about it. But because of the nature of the problem, it's really difficult for anyone to solve it.
Thanks to Stephen Gibbs, our Latin American and Caribbean correspondent, and Kieran Southern, the US West Coast correspondent for The Times and The Sunday Times. And you can read Stephen and Kieran's detailed report on the fentanyl trade online with a subscription. The producer today was Edward Drummond. The executive producer was Kate Ford. And sound design and theme tune were by Mao Lasseto. We've looked into China's role in the fentanyl crisis before and whether the flow of drugs into America is state-sanctioned. Is this actually a reverse opium war? The episode featured the Times diplomatic editor Roger Boys, and we've put a link to it in the description notes of this podcast. And if you want to have a listen back, here's a little taster.
What makes it interesting is this, in this case, is the absolute criminal element of the fentanyl market and this struggle to make it morally just to avenge the horrible things that have been done to Chinese over the years.
If you can, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a look at the debate around assisted dying. What can we learn from Canada, where it's been legal for 8 years? Do listen in.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/news ad free. That's Amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.